I'm Tavika and I'm an addict.
Hi, Tavika.
Wow, it's a big meeting. I feel so nervous. I've never been here before, and it's quite daunting talking through a microphone. One of the questions I got asked, actually, when I was asked to do the chair, was how clean I was. And this June, I celebrated 10 years clean in NA. And for me, it was amazing, because I never, ever thought I would get there. A day at a time, just to get like 30 days or 90 days seemed insurmountable, never mind years. And secondly, from the first drink I picked up, I used for 10 years. So numerically, I think there's something cosmic about being clean for 10 years and having used for 10 years. I used to think it would mean that I could have a drink or something, but obviously that's changed. So, God, 40 minutes, I don't know where to start. I don't think I ever set out to be an addict. And I think it's taken me a really long time to understand the dysfunction in my family and how my family operated. I didn't come from a family of alcoholics or drug addiction. The dysfunction in my family was my father was a workaholic. He was never at home. He was always away. And the same behavioral patterns that I produced, that I kind of manifested through my addiction, I now understand my father to have produced those. So I definitely kind of understand where it came from, if it's a family illness, which I do believe that it is. So there was definitely a lot of dysfunction in the family, but it wasn't as clear cut as like drugs and alcohol. And I think when I became a teenager, I mean, prior to that, I can't really remember, but I think definitely when I became a teenager, I felt really, really lost. I always wanted to be a boy when I was born, growing up. I'd always hang out with the boys. I'd always play football. I'd ask for, like, you know, He-Man and Star Wars figures for Christmas, my birthday, and was really grateful that I got a baby, you know, a younger brother to play with. And I think, like, kind of going, you know, becoming a teenager was like, you know, actually, I'm not a boy, I'm actually a girl, and I can't really disguise it anymore. And I think I definitely started having some kind of identity crisis at that point. When I started using, I remember the first drink I ever had, and I was 12 years old. We were going to a party, and we'd somehow managed to procure a bottle of vodka. I can't remember how. And we got to this party, and I just remember someone saying, "Oh my God, the police are coming." And I had this bottle of vodka in my hand, and I was like, shit, I should just drink it all. So I drank this bottle of vodka, and, you know, to this day, I can't even remember what happened. But anyway, I came home. Apparently, I'd been in the river. My jeans were, you know, like it was. But I just remember coming home, waking up the next day. I was 12 years old. I didn't have a hangover. And just thinking, God, that was great. I don't know what I did. I don't know what happened, but it was great. I just didn't care. I just didn't care anymore. I didn't care whether I liked boys, whether boys liked me, whether anyone liked me, whether I liked anyone, whether I felt awkward, whether I felt whatever. I was just like, you know, I was just there. I felt fine. It was great. And I think that's definitely what I chased. I think that was definitely for me the kind of axiom of my using. Just that sense of not having to care. Because I think up to that point, I was quite sensitive and I did really care. I cared about all of those things. And I just liked having that freedom of not caring. And also that lack of responsibility. Like, I just didn't care what happened to me. You know, anything seemed fine and everything seemed fine. But at that point, I didn't think, oh my God, I'm going to become an alcoholic and I'm just going to drink every day and I'm going to, you know, whatever. But my using did progress like that. Started drinking, smoking spliff, dropping acid, doing ease. coke, speed, you know, loads of hallucinogens. And I don't think I ever thought there was a problem. When I was at school, I was at a really kind of repressed convent school. And the other girls there, they didn't do drugs. So, you know, what I was able to do was kind of find some boys that were older than me to hang out with that were doing drugs. So I was always able to kind of surround myself with people that were older than me, that were kind of, you know, worse than me, whatever that meant. So it was never like, well, you know, I don't have a problem. I'm kind of just, you know, just doing my thing and kind of going with the flow. And so I was never kind of surrounded by people that would ever say to me, God, don't you think it's getting a bit out of hand? Don't you think, like, drinking before you come to school is a bit much? Don't you, you know, I was just like, you know, we were all kind of doing it. Well, I was doing it with my friends and it was fine. So I always had a kind of tendency to kind of just like be able to kind of like leave one crowd, move with another crowd. And, you know, I was quite transient. I never kind of really stayed in anything throughout my years in. I think the only real crisis that happened to me through my through my teenage years was I got thrown out of college for smoking puff. And I guess that actually altered my life. The other thing that happened was my father left at 15, and just emotionally, that was a real catalyst. I think at 15, I was just kind of like, you know what, I might have cared about a few things before, but now I really don't care about anything. It was really painful, and I really started to shut down. And I just kind of, you know, and I just wasn't interested, and I definitely had the drive, you know, the kind of real destructive drive after that point. But as I said, I always kind of managed to kind of camouflage myself into scenes, and so nothing ever seemed that bad, nothing ever seemed out of hand. There was always people that were older than me, so I always kind of seemed like, you know, like that's the kind of shit that you do when you were young. You're kind of just hanging out, having fun, you've got no responsibilities, you've got no problems. Well, at least I don't think you do. And I would, you know, and I would go through drugs, you know, every drug I used it to the point of, you know, like just huge amounts, to the point where it stopped working and I would always be able to substitute it for another drug. And I did that with all the drugs until I found a drug that I truly loved and actually became physically addicted to it. And then there was no leaving it, you know, it was like a marriage that I couldn't get out of. And you know, I guess, it, you know, even at that stage, I mean, there wasn't, you know, I didn't really have much in my life. You know, when I used, that's all I did. And especially towards like the last 3 years of my life. When I was using, that's all I did. I didn't have a job. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have any responsibilities whatsoever. I woke up sick every morning, used, and then just spent the day using. You know, I'd kind of sell drugs here and there. I'd be given money from families, whatever. So, you know, I never really had to kind of do much beyond that to kind of, you know, to get my drugs. But I think the kind of, I think after I kind of progressed to the point of, you know, drugs that I'd actually become physically addicted to, you know, there were definitely things in my life that were starting to shift and I could really start to see destruction. My family, for instance, I mean, you know, no one could stand me in my family because I was such a nightmare. And, you know, my relationship with my mother was awful. You know, I couldn't even talk to her without shouting at her. My sister hated me, but I probably hated her more. You know, I used to actually physically fight with my brother and would have to call the police. You know, it was just such a nightmare. And then my relationships with, you know, other people as well, boyfriends and friends. You know, I'd go through friends, just drop them whenever. You know, I was quite, you know, I was nuts. I just had kind of no boundaries and no, you know, the boundary between insanity and sanity had just been completely eroded. So it was just kind of like, however I behaved, there was always a justification for it. I was never in the wrong because actually they did something to me to provoke me. It wasn't like I just did something. And I could just never accept any kind of level of responsibility. I think after a couple of years using addictive drugs, physically addictive drugs, I started to think, actually, you know what, I have a problem. But I remember the first day I woke up, I'd been probably using this particular drug, and I'm quite hyperactive, and I really need to be sedated. So I'm, you know, downers was always my thing. And I just remember the first day I woke up, and I was sick, and I didn't even know I was sick, because I definitely had these preconceptions that as long as you were using with people, and as long as you were doing this, and you were doing that, and you kind of ticked all those boxes, you actually weren't going to get addicted to this stuff. And I just remember like going over to see my mother, and I was like, and stayed over, and I just couldn't sleep, and I was tossing and turning, sweat, ugh. And I called up my friend, and I was at my dealer, and I said, oh my God, you know, the weirdest thing, I had this really weird night, so and he was like, you're basically sick. And I was like, okay, just stay there, I'm coming to see you. And from that day, I just knew I was never ever gonna be sick again. I just couldn't go through that. And I used every day until I, you know, eventually got clean. There was just kind of like destruction. It was just kind of really empty. My life was getting smaller and smaller, you know, from kind of like going out and having fun, which I used to do. You know, I'd just kind of be like at home with my boyfriend, arguing, fighting, just saying the most awful things I could think of to say to him, storming out, going round to my dealers, just spending like, you know, 2 days there, just like, you know. And it was like, and I just, you know, and I would just kind of come and go. She lived at the bottom of this road, and I lived like a 10-minute walk away from her. And that was kind of my life. It was my house, her house, and another friend that I used to smoke with that lived 10 minutes walk from me. And that was it. That was my life for about 2 years, just those two people and my house. And I never thought I was a paranoid person, but I could never answer the door. You know, and I lived on the top floor flat, and I remember my doorbell used to go, and I'd like, oh my God, you know, and I'd be like hiding behind the sofa, and like someone's gonna see me, and I live on the top floor flat, and it was like, you know, no one's gonna look up and see me and see into the flat. And you know, it was just small, it was just so empty, and it was just so, I just didn't even know how my life had got like that. And I knew I was addicted to drugs, and I knew if I didn't use a particular drug I would get sick. And I just thought, if I could just stop using that one drug, I'll be all right. The other stuff, I'm sure I can just get to grips with. This drug has just seen me over the edge. And went away, tried to clean up, you know, maybe had a couple of days, but you know, what I would always do is I'd always resort back to alcohol. And as soon as I got drunk, I'd go and smoke. And then I'd have to come down, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. As soon as I had a drink, I was fucked. And I stopped drinking a long time ago because I became just such a nightmare. You know, it's really violent, really angry, really aggressive, and I just, you know. And for me, my drug of choice just sedated me. It kept me at home, and I felt safe, to a degree. I didn't know anyone that had ever got clean. I didn't think you could get clean. I thought, this is it, you know what I mean? This is the life, you live what you make, and I'd never heard of recovery. And I remember I'd been trying to, you know, kind of on and off, trying to get clean with an ex-boyfriend, do methadone for a few days, start drinking, start smoking, you know, back on it. And it would never last. And then something changed. He met someone that was in NA, and he started to go to meetings. And the change was that he would wake up early in the morning and kind of like go off to these meetings. Now, I always thought I was really in control in this relationship. And I was kind of like, you know, where's he going? Like, without me or telling me or, you know, like, I don't know if I want him to go, that, you know, whatever. And he was kind of like, yeah, I'm not using, I'm kind of going to meetings. And I remember him like bringing home like the basic text. I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll have a quick look and see what it says. And it was just like reading I don't, it was like A, reason Chinese, and B, it was kind of everything I'd rebelled against. Been at convent school all my life, you know, my mother was like this this devout Christian, and I was just so anti-Christianity. And when I read that basic text, I was like, oh my God, it's like the God squad, like, what's he done? And I knew then I was never ever gonna come to NA. It so wasn't for me. If I could just get off this one drug, I could be okay. And it didn't work out like that. I remember the last time I used, I went on a bender for 3 days. My friend found me and she kind of like dragged me back home and she was like, listen, you're fucked. You've got to pull yourself together. Not supposed to swear.
Don't swear away.
Okay. And I remember just coming back and I never ever used to cry. I couldn't cry. I don't cry much now, but I really couldn't cry then. I was really, you know, I couldn't even tell. You know, I remember like boys used to say to me, oh, I love you. And I'd just be like, oh, you know, what's on TV? Or, you know, let's go out and do, you know, I just couldn't cope with any of that stuff. You know, anything that made me feel vulnerable, anything that, I couldn't cope with. And I remember just coming back to my flat and something inside me just broke. And I was in floods of tears. And I just I had a moment of clarity and I just thought, my life is just fucked. I wake up sick every day. I do the same thing every day. And as soon as my eyes open, you know, I'm just thinking about all the things I did yesterday, how people hate me, how I hate everyone, how life's shit, how this, that. And it's just like, and I've woken up every day like that for 2 years and nothing is going to change. And this friend of mine was like, listen, let's get clean. And I was like, you know what? Kind of like you said, Derek, yeah. I was in so much pain. I was just like, okay, you know, something's broken and I've got to try and do something different. And I started to go to meetings. I scored some methadone. The other thing is I hate being told what to do. And I knew that I couldn't go into a treatment center. The thought of being sick, it was just for me, being sick and someone saying, you've got to go to bed or you can't sit there or just talking to me was just like hell. So I was just like, right, I've just got to try and sit this one out on my own. So I remember I scored some methadone, started going to meetings. After 3 days, I chunked this methadone away and it was just absolute hell. And I don't know how I got clean. I was in my flat on my own. My boyfriend had moved out. And I couldn't eat and I couldn't sleep and I just smoked cigarettes, went to a meeting in the morning, wondered what the hell to do with the rest of the afternoon. I couldn't be with anyone. I couldn't be on my own. I didn't know what to do. I just wanted to like get run over, wake up in a coma 6 months, you know, from a coma 6 months clean, like, ugh. And fortunately that didn't happen. And what I did hear was that, you know, if you keep coming back, the pain will go. And that was all I could hear. And I had to believe in something at that point because I had nothing else. You know, I had no experience of getting clean. I had no experience of hope. You know, my life was just decimated. And I got a sponsor early on and I just went, I kind of had, you know, an inch of faith and I just, you know, really believed that maybe this pain might go away. But I just thought, you know, if anything horrible happens to me, I'm definitely going to use. Or, you know, if something happens I don't like, I'm definitely going to use. You know, that was always like my bartering card. And I kept going to meetings and I started to kind of hang out with people afterwards and it started to fill my day. But, you know, I had such an identity crisis and I remember getting in and saying to people, I mean, what do you do with all your time? I mean, like, you know, what do you do when you leave this meeting? And I remember this guy saying to me, well, what do you like to do? He was like, do you like going to the cinema? And I was like, yeah, you know, if I'm nodding out in the back or, you know, do you like to go to exhibitions? And I was like, no, not really. Do you like to, you know, anything he said? And I was like, no, not really, not really. And that was the thing. I really didn't even know what I liked. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. Didn't know what I was supposed to be doing with my time. And all I knew was the only structure I had was going to these two meetings a day and trying to hang out with people. in between. And I found it so difficult to share, which makes that I'm doing a 40-minute share, but I couldn't share for ages. I found it so difficult to kind of speak and kind of let people in. And I thought people didn't like me. Straight away, I was like, oh, no one likes me. I don't like anyone either. And so I hung out a lot with my old friends. And it was great. You know, I thought I was going to be this kind of like righteous moral person. I'd be going to parties with them and they'd all be doing drugs. And I'd be like, no, thanks. I don't do it. Kind of like this shining beacon. But I'd come away and I'd just feel like such crap. And I'd be like, I don't understand. And it was basically time for me to let them go. You know, I wasn't part of that. And I wasn't part of NA. And I was somewhere in the middle. And I basically had to choose. And, you know, what happened in that time was I met two girls who were roughly my age. Because also when I got clean, all my contemporaries were 10 years older than me. And so I felt quite kind of isolated, like, you know, I'd want to go out all the time and they kind of didn't really. And I'd be like, but I found two girls in recovery that were about my age and we were able to kind of hang out. We kind of formed a pact. We'd all kind of just got clean. And I guess that's really where when I found my foundation in recovery. I found people that I could really relate to. And the rest is just history. No, it's not, because there's about another 15 minutes to go. But I think, you know, it was amazing. You know, people. I used to hear people come in and say, your wildest dreams can come true. And my wildest dreams were like, you know, just like these insane fantasies. I mean, they were not rooted in reality. They were not achieve, they, you know, they weren't anything like that. And I was just like, yeah, you know, kind of was imagining this and that and kind of, you know. And I think the other thing about getting clean quite young is I had really unrealistic expectations of what I could achieve. It was like, well, because I've got clean so young, I've got no excuse. And it's like, you know, I can just achieve anything and do anything and beat anyone. And I could and I couldn't, you know, I could be myself and, you know, and that would have to be enough. And I think there was definitely a kind of breakdown when I was 8 years clean of just like, I don't understand. I'm like 8 years clean and I don't understand why my life is not like this, this, this and this. I mean, that's what I imagined. That's what I wanted. Why hasn't it happened? It's something I'm doing wrong. And, you know, life is, I mean, you know, I think we all have our fantasies. You know, I imagined at 30 I would have retired. I imagined at 30, you know, it would just be like a whole different thing. And, you know, I got to 30 and it was like, you know, it was just one day away from 29. It really wasn't, you know, nothing happened. And so, you know, my journey has kind of been amazing. And from kind of feeling so lost and not having any direction and not really knowing what I've wanted to do, and actually not feeling like I could do much, either feeling like I couldn't do anything or just feeling like I could do everything and everything was below me. It took me a couple of years to actually get to grips with the fact that I had to work. It was like, you know what? You're not the princess in the tower. You just need to go and get a job and kind of, you know, get a grip. But that took a spell in therapy and like, you know, some kind of, you know, reality checks from friends to kind of, you know, get to that point. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I've actually learned to work in recovery. Something I never thought I'd do. The other thing was I was always very academic at school, and I just knew that wasn't something that I wanted to pursue when I got clean. And I was able to kind of go back to college and do something artistic, and I ended up going to an art school. And it's probably one of the most prestigious schools in the world. And I say that not to boast, but like I literally, when I got the call to say, you've been accepted, I couldn't believe it. And I got the piece of paper and I told everyone. And then I just remember it was like 2 days later, I was going somewhere and I was like, suddenly just had this crazy thought. I was like, I've told all these people that I've got into college and it's not true. It's obviously been a complete fantasy. And I had to like go back home and check this piece of paper to see that it was really true. And I think that's when the idea of anything is possible really started opening up to me. From kind of having not even done an art GCSE, I was suddenly at art school with like these amazing people. And it was And it was such a humbling experience, because basically from kind of being quite academic and always being at the top of the class, I mean, not that I wanted to, whatever, you know, I just was. But, you know, to then being amongst people that were just so much better, and I was always at the bottom of the class. And, like, you know, I couldn't draw. You know, it takes a while to understand medium, to, you know, learn to draw. And, you know, they'd been at art school all their lives. And so, you know, every week would have these crits where you kind of produced your work and the teachers and the whole class would go around and look at your work. And I would just be like, you know, in the morning, like, oh, my God, I can't go in. You know, what can I say? I've got to make up an excuse. I can't do it. And I would go there every week. I'd go there. I'd feel humiliated. I hated it. Didn't think it was moving on. I couldn't look at my work objectively. But I think one of the biggest things that recovery has taught me is that on a day-to-day basis, I show up for life. Regardless of how I feel, I show up for life, and I don't use. And I've done some really kind of crazy shit. Like when I first got clean, I didn't know that you were supposed to change. I didn't realize it was a program of change. I kind of just got clean and I was like the same person. You know, I did, you know, I would go around and see my dealer, tell her that I was clean. I would, you know, I remember like really early on, someone owed me some money and they gave it to me in drugs and I sold those drugs. But I didn't know that, you know, that wasn't what you do when you got clean. And it took, you know, it took a really long time to change that stuff for me. But, you know, I did stay clean a day at a time, you know, and things did change. And irrespective of what I was doing and what little work I was doing or no work I was doing or acting out or whatever I was doing, I just didn't use. I turned up for life and things really started to change. And my journey's just been amazing. I mean, there have been so many kind of twists and turns and, you know, and just, you know, some of my dreams have come true and some of my nightmares have been realised. And I think that's just life. And I remember getting clean and just thinking, okay, that's it. Now that I've made this decision to get clean and I'm doing the right thing for me, for my family, for anyone that encounters me, I'm now entitled to a life where actually nothing horrible happens to me. And that was definitely the pact that I made with God. And, you know, obviously that's not life. And, you know, and that was like, you know, that was like a real lesson for me. But, you know, my journey's been amazing. And, you know, I think one thing that recovery has given me that I never, ever had before is, and I hate to say it because it's such an Americanism, but it's given me an attitude of gratitude. And I don't think there was a single thing I was ever, ever grateful for. I mean, I never thought about gratitude. I never thought about being grateful. You know, my mother was a devout Christian, always heard her going on, you should be grateful for this, you should be grateful for that. And I was just be like, oh, whatever. And, you know, today, you know, I'm, like, grateful if I'm able to park outside the front of my house. I take an inventory. You know, it's nightmare, residence parking. You know, I take an inventory every night, and I do it from the step working guide. And, you know, it's kind of reiterated twice in it, like, you know, write a list of things that you're grateful for. So I kind of go to bed with that sense of like, God, you know what? I have got so much to be grateful for. I've got a car that doesn't break down, that gets me from A to B, that I actually enjoy driving. I've got like a really nice home. I've got, you know, friends that love my family. I've got peace of mind. I've got, you know, so much. And it's funny, you know, hearing Derek talk about peace of mind, because that was never in my list of my my wildest dreams. I mean, peace of mind was never a wild thought. I was like, I'd rather the material stuff and you can have your peace of mind. I'm prepared to suffer for what I want. And it's amazing because a lot of things have had to change. And it's almost like the cleaner I've got, the further I've got away from using, actually physically using drugs, but it's almost like the closer I've got to insanity. And it's like I have to put so much work into having this conscious contact with a higher power to just feel sane on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, for instance, I think this is like my fourth or fifth meeting this week. And I don't have issues about how many meetings I do a week. I've kind of got a lot of acceptance around my recovery. And, you know, I pray twice a day. I meditate twice a day. I do an inventory. I do a meditation reading. I do a lot of things to keep myself sane. Because I can't, I physically and mentally cannot operate in any other way. And that has definitely been as a result of having stayed clean. It's like my peace of mind is more precious than anything else, because when I'm in a faff, I just, you know, I can't think straight. I can't go to work. I can't do this. I can't do that. And, you know, for the last 2 days, I've been faffing. I haven't been at work because I've been faffing, supposedly with a foot injury. I've been rubbing cream into my feet, but... and, you know, and I find it so difficult when that kind of, that sense of equilibrium is just kind of evaporated. And, you know, I've had to increase my meditation times, and I've had to really try and kind of calm myself down and just kind of get centered and actually get a different perspective. Because the other thing is, when I start making decisions and acting out of that place, it comes out of a place of fear. And, it's never the right thing. It's not good for me, and it's not good for the other people. You know, some really big things have happened as well. You know, the reason I've been in a faff for the last 2 days is I'm buying my first home, and or at least trying to. It's now going to seal bids and all this stuff, and I'm having to let go, and I can't do that, basically. But I'm trying. And it just feels really big, and it's really scary. I've never bought a property before. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I don't know if, you know, I think that the estate agent's lying to me. I think he's trying to rip me off. I think everyone's trying to rip me off. I'm like, you know, getting all this information from every person because everyone's got their own opinion. And I'm just, you know, faffing about it. And the thing is, you know, I don't always know the right thing to do, but I've also got a lot of people to ask. And I think that's what's been really wonderful about being in recovery is I've met people from all spheres of life who do all manner of thing in their lives. And, you know, and there's so much kind of support out there. You know, I was able to phone friends that work as estate agents in recovery. I was able to phone friends that were property developers in recovery. I was able to phone friends just for a chat. I was able to call my sponsor. And it's just like I was able to get a new perspective. And I think it's amazing, you know, and I apart from the last 2 days where I've really been faff and I've just been like, this is hell, this is a nightmare and I can't cope. I've honestly felt, I don't think I've ever felt better in my whole life. And I feel so different to how I've ever felt in my life. And I really have a sense of freedom. I've also created a life for myself that I love, you know. I have the friends in my life are chosen. Nothing in my life is by default. Everything is chosen in my life. And it feels so privileged. And, you know, I work really hard at my recovery because I feel that I get so much back from it. You know, and I've been able to do so many amazing things. You know, I've traveled, you know, around the world. I remember I got clean and I got my passport. My passport had run out, got a new passport. And it ran out last year, yeah, I think like 2006. And there was like at least one or two stamps on every single page of that passport. So these are like, you know, holiday, you know, these are like places outside of Europe. And it was like, you know, that just felt like such a sense of achievement. It was like, you know, I'm really kind of living a life that I've always wanted. You know, I'm not scared of life. And you know, one of my goals this year was like, you know, take a risk, do something that I wouldn't normally do. And I think, you know, for me, it is that sense of always kind of just, you know, just not getting into a kind of niche of recovery. It's like, you know, I'll only do that meeting there and I'll only hang out with that person there and I'll only go out with a guy that's that tall and looks like that and does that and you know, and it's just about trying to, you know, for me, just kind of live life, experiment, just feel free in my life, you know, not feel confined by recovery because I felt confined by drugs, you know, not clamber into a kind of safety net, you know. I do like to feel quite free in my life. I do feel like I've always been quite a free spirit. And that part of me has never gone. And I remember, I'm going to finish up soon. And I remember kind of doing my step six, and I was just so paranoid. I couldn't do it for ages and ages because I just thought, if I get rid of all these defects, I'm just literally, I don't even know who I'm going to become. At worst, I'm going to become my mother, but I'm just going to become like personalityless, you know, just. And the truth is, the steps have brought me closer to me and all the things that I've really liked about me, and there were some, it took me a while to find them, but there were some. You know, they've just, you know, that it's just really kind of embodied that. And I feel, today, I just feel so kind of, I feel close to my truth. I really have a sense of who I am. I really don't mind me. I actually quite like me. I wake up every morning, I feel fine. I make a decision to do whatever it is that I want to do, unless I wake up late and then we're on autopilot. And I just feel like I have such a sense of freedom today. I can go anywhere, I can do anything. Well, maybe not anything, but you know, I definitely have a sense of freedom that I've never felt before. And I feel, you know, I really feel like I've kind of broken through, you know, some kind of prison of addiction. And yeah, it's amazing. I was saying this to a friend the other day. I just feel so amazing. My conscious contact with my higher power is what keeps me clean and safe. And I really feel like I experience life with a real lack of fear today. I mean, obviously some days are more fearful than others. And that feels like a really amazing place to come from. And I can't believe I've made it to 40 minutes. That's amazing. I'll leave it there. Thanks. Thank you.